brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. Suds, suds, suds. It's time for more suds.
Welcome to another suds segment with good old boy Mike. Today we're going to be exploring end of the year beers. And with me, I have my co-host, our good old boy Dave.
Hello, sir.
And good old gal Juliana.
Hi.
And good old boy John.
Hello, everyone.
And this segment, we have some very interesting beers to discuss, as well as, I think, just the general seasonality of beers and availability of a lot of the beers that we have in front of us. Today, our Suds ratings are 1, that sucks, give me anything but a bud. 2, was that a belch? 3, what a relief. 4, a body should really not make that sound. 5, listen to that hand time. So those are our Suds ratings here on Sip Suds and Smokes for Suds. Today we are tasting 5 beers that are kind of considered end of the year seasonals. We have Nice Chouf, Golden Careless Noel, Sierra Nevada's Bigfoot Ale 2013, Grand Cru Dark Ale from Green Flash, and a very special tasting of West Lederen 12. Please hold your applause down to a deaf noise. And my co-hosts are just in dead awe that I actually broke out a bottle of this. So I want to thank all of you that have enjoyed our free beer contest and giving away a pack of West Lederen 12. And thank you for listening. And today we'll actually have a chance to review this beer with you here on this episode. Very interesting beers for this setup. And I think one of the topics that I always enjoy is, you know, end of the year beers are very difficult sometimes to find in terms of availability. And I guess one of the topics that I wanted to discuss here is that you do not have to think that seasonal beers always have to be consumed within the season that they are meant to be brewed in. I know that for many of us, thinking about having a spiced, hopped-up monster in June is just like a sacrilege moment. But I think that these beers that we're discussing today don't have the element of seasonality and can be enjoyed no matter what the season are that you are currently looking at them. So the part of what's very difficult with seasonal beers is the way that distribution works with both international beers as well as domestic U.S. beers. And inevitably what happens is that you end up with this crescendo of a lot of beer in a very short period of time, and you don't have the ability, one, to enjoy it, or B, you can afford it all. Through some of the distribution models of some of these products, you don't actually see them in the market until well after, you know, 2 months after they've been released. So I'm curious how the three of you kind of navigate, you know, seasonality, especially with these end of the year beers, not these beers in particular, but you know, as you think about those kind of end-of-the-year beers, I mean, is there some that you're like, wow, I would enjoy this in February? How about it, Dave?
Well, I think you have to look at each beer individually, you know, and do a little research. You know, if a beer projects itself as a holiday beer, then you kind of know what it is. But if a beer just happens to come out at the end of the year, then you really want to look at the brewery and the type of beer to make sure it's the kind of beer you're going to want to drink.
Well, and I think that brewers tend to pull out all the stops in terms of both ingredients, the element of craft that they tend to put into some of these beers sure. as well. And I think is to me, it's no different than looking at a painting. You know, to say, wow, you put a lot of time and love and a lot of heart, you know, into crafting that art. And, you know, to just walk by it and say, that was pretty good for 30 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow.
If I was at Christmas, that'd be a pretty good painting, you know.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool, you know. But
I just think it's the ultimate jack slap, though.
Yeah,
exactly. I think to the artist, you know, at the helm of this. Juliana, what do you think?
You know, if it's a beer that you like, and I look forward to this time of year where it's a darker, you know, more flavorful beers. Not saying that summer hoppy beers aren't flavorful.
She was pointing to John.
Exactly. That was a very dirty look.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is now February, and we're enjoying these. And I could see myself enjoying this in March and even April. Maybe not in the dead heat of August, but, you know, given the right circumstance.
Oh, some of these I would have in August.
Well, yeah, the one that's now empty. But I mean, in the scheme of things, you don't have to categorize something just solely on the season that it comes out as.
I totally agree. I don't really drink beer by the season. I drink beer by what I feel like drinking at the time. It doesn't make any difference to me whether it's August or it's January. If I feel like having a stout, I want a stout. I don't really care if it's 100 degrees outside. That's not what I'm, you know, going for. I can make it, you know, 65 degrees in my house. I can just chill it down in the house if I need it to be cooler when I'm drinking. Mm-hmm. So, as far as end of the year beers go, the way I navigate the whole process is I try to be selective. I try to grab beers that I've never had before or I've heard buzz about, if you can get your hands on them.
Or I would go so far to say that you and I share some kindred spirit that less spice is more spice.
I totally agree. I think there's a way to get spice without putting spice in a beer.
Please have a cinnamon stick up my left nostril. I don't need that. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And you know, I'm not a huge ager of beers, but I will buy beer with the sole purpose of drinking it later.
You seriously said the word age and beer in front of me.
Oh my God, he just talked about that.
Sacrilege moment.
I did. I don't necessarily buy beer to drink it immediately all the time. I will buy beer. I mean, you have a wine cellar. I have a beer cellar, and I put a lot of beer away, and I don't leave it for long periods of time. But I like to let it kind of settle and age. Beers that have traditionally been better with a little bit of age on
them. That's a good point, John, too, is that beers that are, you know, of a certain ABV or gravity need to be aged. You know, because they almost become like wines.
I agree.
Scotch ales.
There's a measure of bottle conditioning that actually enhances a lot of the quality of many of the beers that we're sampling here tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think of high gravity beers certainly can, I think, improve with a little bit additional bottle conditioning.
Right.
That's not to say that I have to dump them out, throw them in a bourbon barrel, and declare victory that I've inserted, you know, flavor by, you know, some other infusion. But there is a method to the component of bottle conditioning that I do think enhances the quality of some of these.
Well, and I wouldn't want to step on any toes here in the place, but
he's not saying the word aged beer.
There are certain people who would say that beer is actually more complex than wine, you know, because, you know, we know what wine is going to be in certain varieties, but beer has a lot more variation to it, you know, and when you put it at a certain, you know, strength, as they say, that when you give it time, it will really become what it's going to be.
Good old boy Dave is watching me swoon.
I know.
moments of every landmine these.
Yours were the toes I didn't want to step on.
Oh my God. Why is it? Okay. All right.
How did I get this guy into my house?
What am I doing? Well, it's a very interesting topic, and I'm glad that we've had a chance to sample these five beers tonight. I am so excited that we get to talk about these beers, you know, in this segment. If they have drifted by, you know, your retailer, you know, you should just definitely take a moment to try these. We'll share our tasting notes with you through this segment, but there are certainly other end-of-the-year seasonals that we're not talking about in this segment, and I think hold some of the same characteristics of some of what we're going through tonight. So, what do we have in the lineup? It is, did I go through the lineup?
No.
I did. I went through one, yeah. Which I think I just went through one, which was Nice Le Chouf, or Nice Chouf, Golden Careless Noel, Bigfoot Ale 2013, Green Flash, Grand Cru, and Westleteren 12. Yes, I remember. Everybody stood up and applauded last time I said that. So. Still hear the applause. All right. First up is Nais Le Chouf, or Chouf, I'm sorry. And I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of that. So those of you that know how to say it correctly, please drop me a line to subsidesandsmokes@gmail.com and just insult me and say, please shut up, you redneck geek. All right. This is a very interesting beer, a great end-of-the-year beer. They produce this every year, and, you know, it's slightly different every single year. I would just, you know, their description on the label is that it is an ale brewed with spices, thyme, and curacao peel. I'm not quite sure exactly what that is. I've been to that island, that part of the world, but I'm not quite sure exactly what fruit or spice they're referring to, possibly just cocoa peel. But I would describe this beer as rich, dark, complex, slightly sweet, would be some of the characteristics I would use to describe this beer. I would have this anytime, March, April, May, August, November, Wednesdays, Saturdays, Fridays. Any of those days work for me. So my son's rating for this is 4. A body should really not make that sound. Great beer. Wonderful choice. I always come back to it every year, and this year has been no different. Good old boy Dave, what do you think about Nice Chouf?
Well, I found it to be a very complex and malty beer with good notes in the nose and in the flavor. And I don't know that I would have it all the time just because it's so complex and so beautiful, but I think it could be a special occasion beer for anyone who enjoys good, really good beers. And I would definitely give it a 4.
Oh, a 4. A body should really not make that sound. Cool. Excellent. Good old gal Juliana, what do you think about Nice Chouf?
I really enjoyed this one in the sense of I almost got this vinegariness of like a Rodenbach with it, which blew me away because I was expecting all the spiciness, you know, and that traditional heavy, complex flavors.
John was.
Of course he was. Yes.
He'd already discarded it when he saw the word.
He is a closet spice lover.
Not hopped up.
But the little, you know, subtle vinegariness of it just really opened it up to me. And it's a beautiful, beautiful beer.
It is.
Beautiful beer.
So what is your suds rating for this?
I'm in the 5.
5? Listen to that hang time. Give me another. Wow. Okay. Good old boy John, what did you think of Nice Chouf?
It's a really interesting beer. I think complex is the word that I keep kind of coming to. There's so much going on in this beer that there's dark fruit notes, there's that herbal component, and I think the vinegar that you that Juliana kept noting, I get more like a sherry alcohol note to it.
That's a very good pickup. I missed that. And you're right on. Yeah, I agree. Those people have not had sherry. I agree. That's a very good description.
Yeah,
right there.
It gets. And like I said, it's something you don't get in a lot of beers. But when I taste it, I kind of am able to really pick it out. So yeah. I liked it. It's not a beer I would drink all the time. I think it's a little bit, it's a little heavy for me to have year round. But once a month, once a quarter would be fine. Sure. Yeah. My suds rating was a 3.
A 3. Ah, what a relief. All right, so John's no longer admitted to the country of Belgium, but it does all right. Our next beer up is Golden Careless Noel. Very interesting end-of-the-year beer. And, you know, this is one of those end-of-the-year beers that I find really changes dramatically from one year to the next.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember there are a couple of other Golden Careless that I routinely buy and or have sent me that I've really enjoyed. And one is the Cuvée de Kaiser, which is the King's beer. It's a reserve that they produce every year, and it's probably one of my top picks, you know, of really fabulous beers in terms of seasonal beers that are made. This is not a tough step from the beer of the Kaiser or the beer of the King that is made by Golden Careless. And this is probably one of the better years that I've enjoyed, the Golden Careless Noel. My tasting notes for this are that I thought that it was honey sweet, dark, and just kind of a hint of spice. And I couldn't really put my finger on what spice, you know, that was really there. I don't know, it was like cardamom or something that just, you know, was one of those spices that really pissed John off. I'm sorry. I think that definitely takes your palate and goes, that normally is not here, but I really like it right now. So my such rating for Golden Careless Noel is 4. A body should really not miss out. Good old boy Dave, what do you think about Golden Careless Noel?
Well, I think I've identified the spice that you weren't sure about.
There you go.
And it's either star anise or you might want to call it licorice.
No, okay. So it's either anise or anise seed or one of those.
And I do not like star anise.
You do not.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Jaeger. I don't like licorice. But
all right, good old boy Dave does not know that I have almost a 200-year recipe for Christmas cookies that include the inclusion of anise seed in them.
Well, I have a package of anise seed at my house that you can have.
I know. You go. You can have it. So you are cut off from the Christmas cookie list.
I'm off the Christmas cookie list.
I'm not going to send that to you. But there are other people that don't enjoy that spice.
But if I did, could finish, what I was going to say is actually this beer is drinkable even though I'm not a big fan of licorice.
Huh.
The complexity, the smoothness of it, it really makes it okay, you know. And even though I'm not a big fan of that flavor, I do think that this is a good conduit for it. So I would give it a 3.
A 3. Ah, what a relief. Okay. Good old gal Juliana, what did you think about Golden Careless Noel?
This is a really special beer. I mean, to me, it really is. It's
special to celebrate without Dave.
Yeah, from the sounds of things,
or special
definitely.
As in Olympics.
Wow. I love the licorice in it. It's not overwhelming, or I guess it should be called star anise. I love that flavor, though. And to me, that's what Christmas tends to be all about. It's not just about the cinnamon and, you know, maple flavors. It's about these, like, sort of interesting mixes. And I get the honey that sort of coats over the licorice before I get to this, like, Belgian candy flavor, which is just really neat.
Yeah, and I like that description. That's pretty good and accurate, you know.
It's a really neat beer. It's a gorgeous color. I mean, that's a beautiful dark brown. Just stunning. Mm. Now, would I have this all year round? No. But I definitely, you know, through the winter months and like and fall months, I could definitely fall into winter and then winter in the spring. I could definitely enjoy this. Hmm. Yeah, for like 6 months out of the year. A wonderful beer.
Good old boy John, what do you think about Cold and Careless Noel and all the spices?
All of the spices tended to overwhelm my palate, to be quite honest.
Oh my God.
Go figure.
It's like, yeah. Go figure. There we go. Oh my God. Do you want me to do your suds rating for you?
I am slightly predictable. But much like Dave, I am not a fan of licorice. And to me, this beer is overly sweet and not balanced. There's a component missing to me.
Like a pound of Centennial hops.
Probably.
If you do a pound of any hop,
then you'd be happy.
I would be happy. But I think in general, it's just missing something. The sweetness is overwhelming to me, and then the licorice distracts for me. I did give it a 2 because I can...
Wow.
Was that a belch?
That's nice.
Yeah, I was being generous, I think.
You'll never be admitted to.
Well, we'd like to go to Belgium today.
Yeah.
You'll be standing there in Germany just waving at the people across the border.
We have all the Belgian, good BLB. There are Belgian styles. Everybody. I enjoy. This wasn't one of them.
So, be standing there with a Heineken in your hand going... Yeah. What the hell happened?
You know? Licorice suds, hey, yeah. What up?
You know, you can throw up a good bottle across the border. Yeah.
All right.
Oh.
Keep your Jaeger.
Well, that definitely brings us right about in full circle on this train ride to Belgium. Arksbeer is a barley wine. Bigfoot Ale from Sierra Nevada. This is a end-of-the-year seasonal that they make every year at Sierra Nevada, and they actually stamp this in some vintage form each year. I've really enjoyed Bigfoot for, I don't know, probably 10 years now. This was a very interesting year for Bigfoot. I would have to say it's probably at the top of my list of all the Bigfoot that has been made. In fact, I would actually go so far to say it's the best barley wine that I've had in a few years. Mm. It's very good. It's just everything you think about in a barley wine. It's just very complex. Has a lot of flavor to it. It's a great balance of hoppiness to it. I just thought it was a terrific barley wine. My sud rating is 4. A body should really not make that sound. And I'm going to definitely toss this right back to the hop monster for John to talk about, to get him out of the doghouse and where he can freely move about some country, at least in the great state of California.
Exactly.
Again,
I'm being extremely predictable, but this is a really, really good beer.
You think?
Shocking.
This beer has more balance in it, and I think, oddly enough, it would actually age pretty well. I think that the hops are, right now it's drinking extremely well, but I think a year from now it would drink just as well. Mm. There's an alcohol warmth to this one that would probably fade a little in a year. And would mellow out and become much more drinkable even than it is now. Lots of dark fruit notes. Again, we're kind of getting that theme with a lot of these beers, is the amount of dark fruit. But it's a very smooth beer for a barley wine, even this young. And I just loved it. So I give it a 4.
Wow. A body should really not make that sound. Well, thank you, John. Good old gal Juliana, what do you think about Bigfoot?
It's very yummy. What I really was interested in, you know, when I think of a barley wine, I think of like just huge flavors. And the toffee at the beginning was just right there in my face. And then I got some hoppiness. And then I got some like raisiny plumminess and was impressed at how smooth each transition was. It's a very smooth beer for it being so complex. And yeah, I'd love to see what this is like in a year, because I can just imagine the flavors melding even that much more and being more intensified by then.
Have either of you had the barley wines in previous years, or the Bigfoot? I'm sorry.
I think I've had 2011s. I didn't get last year's.
So do you recall any of the taste profiles of the previous years, you know, that you remember?
I remember it being, for me, it seemed to be similar, but this one seems more like balanced all the way through out of the box.
That's it.
They tend to be very compartmental in years past. You'd get the malt, the hop, then the alcohol, and then it would go away.
Yep.
This, to me, is all in one box all at the same time.
I think that is a very accurate description, I think, of most impressions of most barley wines that I've had, is that it's like this assault on your palate, you know. And this seems to be far more balanced.
Yeah.
And somebody basically got the wake-up moment, or more importantly, the folks at Sierra Nevada finally figured out what was the missing moment. Mm-hmm. You know, either in the way that they were, the hops that they were using, or the mechanism they were using of combining these ingredients with temperature to say, this year I think we finally figured out what was the X factor, because this barley wine to me has whatever the X factor is.
So, yeah, it's not choppy like years of previous.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only been able to try out the 10 and 11, but this is just, I mean, this is smooth right from the get-go.
Juliana, what's your sedge rating for this?
This is a
4. A body should really not make that sound. Good old boy Dave, what did you think about Sierra Nevada's Bigfoot Ale?
Well, you know, I completely agree with everyone. The two words I had were hoppy and clean. You know, the maltiness balanced with the hoppiness very well. And this is one of those beers I think you can buy a 6-pack. If you can find it, buy a 6-pack and drink one a year for the next 6 years.
That's a good way of thinking about it.
Put them down in
your
cellar.
I would do that with the Weisleiterin, you know, probably first, but this would be a good
you
second
know, yeah,
choice.
You know, because I think every year you're going to get something different, but I think it's going to be good every year. And I would definitely give this a Sudge rating of 4.
4. A body should really not make that sound. Well, thanks. Excellent discussion about that barley wine. And next up is Green Flash Grand Cru Dark Ale. Green Flash is a West Coast brewery in San Diego. We've reviewed a couple of products from them. I know one of the things that seems to wind up, you know, in my fridge every week is their Friendship Ale, which I have no idea why, but I just keep on going back to it. It's just a really wonderful beer. This particular beer, Grand Cru, their dark ale, I don't know that they, I don't know if I would describe it as their crescendo moment of the end of the year. It seems like they have a lot of crescendo moments at Green Flash lately. A lot of great beer coming out of Green Flash. But this particular beer seemed to be right in the same style, the same beers that we're talking about, a Belgian dark ale that they came out on the market, you know, at the same time. And I think a lot of, you know, the distinction of Grand Cru says, I've pulled out all the stops, you know, to bring it home for you with this. And, you know, very interesting tasting alongside of these. And I don't think that I probably would have described this if I hadn't done it in a point of comparison with everything else in front of us, you know, today. So my tasting notes for Green Flash Grand Cru are, I think it's a deep, dark ale, zero hops, and I just wrote down, really, this is West Coast? Because I'm sorry, but I am really shocked that somebody on the West Coast would make a beer like this. And it just tells me that the folks at Green Flash just really enjoy making great beer, and truly do not have to throw a ton of hops in to infuse flavor. And I think really paying attention to creating a rich, malty flavor dark ale. So my sedge rating for this is a 4. A body should really not make that sound. Good old boy Dave, what do you think about Green Flash Dark Ale here?
Well, you know, this is something that, You know, when I drink a Grand Cru, I think of maybe Chimay or Omegang or something, or Duvel, something like that. I don't really think of West Coast breweries doing a Grand Cru.
Yeah.
And this beer could be one of those. You know, it could be from Belgium. It could be from Omegang, you know. And it's deep and malty. And I can taste the yeastiness of it. It's very beautiful. I would definitely give this a 4.
A body should really not make that sound. Well, I think that that's very interesting, you know, to recognize that, yeah, I mean, this is not what I would think from a West Coast brewer, you know, in general. Good old girl, Juliana, what do you think about Green Flesh?
I totally agree. I mean, I was blown away. Like, when I think of Green Flash, I think of those IPAs, and I think of those hoppy beers, which is what California is known for.
Palette Wrecker, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hey,
appropriately named.
But Palette Wrecker is awesome for what it is.
Yeah.
Like, totally. But this,
I've never heard a beer that's been more appropriately named.
That's very good of them. But this, I mean, it was so neat. And I really did not... It reminds me of when I went to Omegang and went to that brewery and had some of those, like, big, fat Belgian beers. I just...
Rare VOS.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, that's what it reminds me of, totally. Yeah. And it impresses me that Green Flash can come out with something like this. But it's got, I mean, it hits everywhere where it's supposed to. And it's very malty, and it's the malty flavors that I would want to have. So, yes, I really dig this beer.
So what's your suds rating on the Green Flesh Grand Cru?
I would be a 4.
A 4? A body should really not make that sound. Good old boy John, what did you think about Green Flesh Grand Cru here?
Well, as you can expect, I am a fan of Green Flesh. A West Coast brewery that loves hops, that throws tons of hops and everything.
Please hire John now.
Yeah, no, really.
And given that, I would be drawn to buy this beer, and I would be surprised when I drank it. And I am surprised now that I like it. It's a very balanced example of a Grand Cru. If you didn't tell me that this was a West Coast brewery, I would have no clue. I would assume it's a Rodenbach or a Chimay or another, you know, traditional example of a Grand Cru. This is another example of an innovative craft brewery who's stepping out of the box of what they have to do on the West Coast and doing something that's a little bit different, that they just want to push the limits and the boundaries of what they can do. And I think that is, this beer is a great example of that. And for that reason, I gave it a 4.
A 4. A body should really not make that sound. Well, I think that's definitely one of the interesting beers to throw in the mix of things. We have truly gone from one side of the ocean to another and looking at a lot of brewers' approach and saying, if I have to pull all the stops out, what am I going to do, man, you know, at the end of the day? So I like to think that I wouldn't say it's their best foot forward, but I think that it's one of the more interesting moments of them stepping outside their wheelhouse and saying, you know what, sure, I'm a great brewer at the end of the day. I can bring it, man. I don't really care what you want to call it.
Well, plus, you know, also, you know, different strains of yeast are more available now, you know, and different grains are available now, so they can be more experimental, you know, and these guys, they all taste, you know, like we're sitting around drinking all these great beers now. They all sit
around. We're drinking beers as we're talking about this?
No, don't talk about it.
We are.
Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Why the show's like, so great.
Yeah, that they all sit around and drink great beers too. You know, like, dude, you know, what if we took what this brewer is doing and what this brewer is doing and put it with what we're doing, you know, that's what we can make, you know. So I think there's a lot of that going on too, you know.
Well, I think that brings us to the crescendo moment of this discussion, which is Weisselitterin 12. Brewed by the monks. I can't even remember how I talked about that last time. So this is just...
Wow.
Yeah, you know, just want to stop and say, you know, wow. So for those of you that are not familiar with this beer, Trappist beers have been traditionally brewed within monasteries. The Weisselitterin Ale is, I think, been elusive for the general public primarily because of availability.
Yes.
More than anything else. And I'm not a fan of reviewing products that are unobtainable, ever. What's the point?
Hey, guess what? We're drinking this and you'll never taste it.
You know, I had the perfect wine. I had the perfect coffee. You know, I had the perfect, you know, beer. You know, and I think that part of what I wanted to explore in this discussion about Weisselitterin is not just the review of the beer itself, but I'm really quite curious with each of you if you think that the point of supply-demand has influenced the way that you think about this beer itself. Because there's one thing to say somebody rated the beer or somebody else has tasted it, you know, as it's approached the market, and influenced to say it's something. And then now today you've tasted it and you just, you know, did it hit the mark that you were thinking of, you know, itself? So I recognize that a lot of you probably will not be able to enjoy this beer, and that's unfortunate. Part of it is just, you know, the monasteries decided they have a certain measure of production they want to produce every year,
that's bills to pay.
And, you know, from their perspective, it's like we're making the good stuff and cutting it off. So, so if you do happen to run across this, I would enjoy your thoughts about whether it fulfilled some of the elements of supply and demand and what you thought about it today for our discussion. I definitely wanted to talk about what did you think about the beer, and if there was some hype, you know, in your mind, what did it live up to? So my thoughts about Weisselitterin 12 is I just thought that it was sweet Belgian darkness all the way. Great beer. And you know, I feel it's nice to be able to taste it, but my sud rating for this is actually a 4. The body should really not make that sound. So I've had some beers that I thought were a cut above this, but still, it's a really great beer, and I'm glad that we had a chance to taste it today. Good old boy Dave, what do you think about Weisselitterin 12?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought it up that way about how does it make a beer more desirable if you can't get it, you know? Or, you know, John has brought in some Russian River stuff that we can't get in Tennessee. You know, and there are a lot of things that we can't get in Tennessee. Like, we used to be able to get Dogfish Head, but now we can't. You know, or so, you know, in my travels, you know, I go to Asheville or I go to Georgia or we go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, or we go down to Huntsville, Alabama.
Beer capital of Middle Tennessee.
That's right. You know, we go all around the state of Tennessee and we can get beers that you cannot get in this state. And all of them have, you know, certain good qualities and bad qualities. But this beer is very good, but if someone is trying to sell it to you on eBay for $1,000 a bottle or something, don't buy it. Because it's good, but it's not that good. I mean, it's a very good beer.
That would be me. Don't cancel your bid. Don't cancel your bid right
unless
now.
It's,
unless it's Mike.
Unless it's Mike at Sip Subs. You know, don't buy it then, you know. But what I'm saying is that, you know, there are a million really great beers in the world. But, you know, you're not going to be able to get all of them. And just because there's a beer that someone tells you you can't get doesn't mean that it's the greatest beer in the world. And I really don't think this one is. Mm-hmm. So I would give this one A three.
A three. At best. Ah, what a relief. Good old boy. Good old boy.
Say
good old gal.
Go
Juliana, I am so sorry. What did you think of Wiss Litter in 12?
But I'm like one of the boys. There was a lot of hype surrounding this. You know, everyone kept saying that, oh my God, if you get a bottle of this. Exactly. You know, the heavens open up and everything is crazy. And be that as it may, I did enjoy this, like, immensely. The flavor of it was consistent throughout. Was this something that I'm like, wow, I, you know, will save thousands of dollars to have again? Probably not. However, I mean, I'm honored to be able to be here to try this for what it is. I'm very respectful of the monks that make this. I mean, this is a really good quality beer. Is it like the best of the best ever? No. But it is a really good sipping beer. And that's the key to me, is that this is a sipping beer.
Yeah, definitely not something that good old boy Jim talks about, lawnmower beer. And
no,
throwbacks.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't
exactly.
want to drink three pints at a time, yeah.
No. But
drink one, send me two.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. But if anyone can, I mean, it is something to appreciate for what it is. It is a really good beer.
Good old boy John, what did you think of Wiss Litter in 12?
The first thing I wrote down was wow. It is a very, very good beer. And unlike Dave, don't cancel your bids. It is worth buying this beer if you can get a hold of it. I think demand, supply and demand is a huge problem with this beer. I would love for it to have more availability, mostly because it wouldn't be priced in the manner that it is. But it's such a good beer for the style that it is. It is the best Belgian dark that I think I've ever had. Mm. And it's, to me, it's very balanced. The more I've sat here and sipped on it, the warmer it gets, the more the alcohol kind of balances the malt sweetness. There are no hops in this beer, or very little, is my guess.
If any, yeah.
But what's in there is there for a reason. There's a legitimate purpose for every piece and ingredient that's in this beer. And I respect the people who make it, the reason they make it, and I wish there was more of it. But it's a great beer. I gave it a 4.
A 4? Body should really not make that sound.
And again, I would, if you can get a, if you can find a bottle somewhere, buy this bottle. It's worth the drinking.
And if I may, one quick interesting note about this, what you had said before, it like opens up really as it warms. This really isn't the type of beer that I would have super cold.
Yeah.
No.
It just, I mean, the more, you know, room temperature, it just really blooms.
Well, that's a test of a good beer.
And it, exactly.
How it opens up as it warms, you know.
Always. Well, I think that is a common comment about all the beers that we've enjoyed in this segment of Sip, Suds, and Smokes. So, well, it's been a very interesting discussion once again, and we've really enjoyed the beers that we've shared with you today. Thank you for joining us on this segment of Sip, Suds, and Smokes. I'm good old boy Mike.
Good old boy Dave.
Good old girl Juliana.
Good old boy John.
We're going to ask you to keep on sipping. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the good old boys, will see y'all next time.